Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets. If you don't win your first bet, that's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
This is your moment, your time to shine, your comeback. You're ready for the next step in your career, and you want an education employers respect. So you're not just going back to school. You're coming back with Purdue Global. Backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected public universities, Purdue Global is built for people who bring their life experience into the online classroom. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Here's something you might not know about wireless. Sometimes what you see isn't what you get. But with Visible, what you see is what you get. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. Just $25 per month, taxes and fees included. Switch now at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Is your underwear in need of a refresh? Meet Tomboy X, makers of the original boxer briefs for women, queer-founded and queer-run. Tomboy X designs sustainable, gender-inclusive underwear and apparel in sizes 3 extra small to 6 extra large. Use code IHEART at checkout for 20% off your first purchase only at TomboyX.com. Shop now on TomboyX.com.
Hello, the internet, and welcome to season 231, episode 1 of Der Daily Zeitgeist, a production of iHeartRadio. This is a podcast where we take a deep dive into America's shared consciousness. It's Monday, May 23rd, 2022. I don't know what that means. What does that mean, Miles?
Oh, May 23rd? Oh, you didn't know?
And
well,
you don't
let me
know?
Tell you. Thank you. Like I said, it's not because I'm in a panic searching what it is. It's because there's just a lot of excitement around today, which is World Turtle Day. So if you like turtles, shout out to
you. I saw a turtle today.
Wow. Okay, see, that's in line with the spirit
of
the day.
It's all happening. It's already happening.
National Lucky Penny Day. So I mean, for those that indulge in the...
Two of the biggest days.
Believing in the lucky piece of
turtle, lucky penny.
Don't combine them.
Yeah.
No. No, please don't.
Two types of ponds that you want to keep separate. The wishing pond and
you know, take a bag full of turtles.
Yeah.
Take a bag full of turtles to the Trevi Fountain.
Yeah. Anyways, my name is Jack O'Brien, a.k.a. Mona Lisa Simpson Hands. That is courtesy of Chris Mackling. I think we were talking about how all artists should take the pressure off of the rest of us and only draw people with Simpsons hands.
Bro, right, because we're talking about how, the tweet was every culture has mermaids because legs are too hard to draw.
Yeah, exactly.
Please, bring back.
Anyways, Chris, appreciate the tweet, especially parenthetical at the end, no singing involved, which is helpful both because I'm sick and not a good singer when I'm not sick.
Oh.
So appreciate that, and I'm thrilled to be joined, as always, by my co-host, Mr. Miles Gray!
Uh-oh, call me LeVar Smoking, because I can see everything. I'll take a look in a tiny book. I'm seeing things, bro. Shout out to Christy Yamaguchi, man, at Waffle House, because you know I'm just... These eyes, man. Eyes. You know,
the conversation before we start rolling is the conversation after we start rolling. This man has a new identity.
It's a marked difference, you know, and we take our eyesight for granted. And I realize, look, I'm It's the small victories that that add up for me.
And we did. So we talked about how you did the vision test after they just sewed your eyes back up, and the you know, people in the lab coats were like muttering to one another and being like checking each other's notes in, in a confused murmur. And we finally got word that not only were you seeing things that should have been impossible, but you were seeing what was on the screen days ago.
Yes.
So your eyes apparently are able to see through time. And
thank
they're
you.
Still trying to figure it out.
They said, get me Lloyd Austin at the Pentagon now. The second I read that second line, they know they've created a super Antifa soldier right now.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Well, Miles, we are thrilled to be joined in our third seat by an acclaimed author, musician, and podcast host of the new show, Cool People Who Did Cool Stuff, from Robert Evans and Sophie Lichterman's network, Cool Zone Media. Yeah. It's the brilliant and talented Margaret Kiljoy!
Margaret!
What's up?
Welcome.
Thanks. Welcome, Margaret.
I'm excited to be here. I don't have a clever name for myself other than Margaret, unfortunately.
Is Kiljoy your legal name?
No, but I...
Then that works.
I took it a very long time ago when I was a much more cynical activist. Now it's kind of ironic.
Right.
Yeah, your show is very much, I mean, one of the best titles for a show, in that you know exactly what it is from the title, Cool People Who Did Cool Stuff, but it does clash with your name, which is cool as fuck, by the way. You don't need, when your name is Jack O'Brien, you need to come up with AKAs and shit, but Margaret Kiljoy does lots of work for you. So
yeah, fair enough.
This show, like when people hear that, cool people who did cool stuff, you know, I'm sure it's nebulous enough that someone could, you know, map their own meaning to it and say, oh, maybe something cool about crypto. No. You're giving people the imagination on what
it's still
means
early.
To...
It's still early, Miles. You might take it to crypto. I don't know.
Yeah. Why not? It is fun to be the arbiter of cool.
Right.
Yeah. But tell people a little bit about the kinds of cool people that are covered in the podcast, because I think it's just a fantastic show and a fantastic concept and much needed type of content for people, especially in the times we're in right now.
Well, my background is mostly as an activist. And so a lot of the people that I think are particularly cool are various revolutionaries and people who fight against oppressive systems and people who carve out their own ways of being, and I don't know. We'll see what directions it goes. But for now, you know, the first episode is about the anarchists fighting for the 8-hour workday in Chicago, and did stuff about, actually, the first two episodes managed to be about Chicago, completely happenstance. The other one was direct action abortionists in Chicago 100 years later, and we'll see where it goes from there.
Yeah. I always talk about this, and on the show, we generally talk about how we just lack the imagination for revolutionary thinking and examples of people who, you know, really took it upon themselves to look at a situation that was untenable and said, well, there's something has to give and here's how we can pursue that. Because I feel like most people, the thought stops at so fucked up right now.
Yeah.
That because it's typically because no one has a lot of examples to go, oh, you know what so-and-so did? Because in every other examples in our lives, we have ways to sort of take up for ourselves, or we have examples that inform what a potential next step would be in a given situation. But we've done a really good job in the world to kind of dull that sort of that imagination for revolutionary action.
Yeah, and then bury it, you know? We only see the negative examples, because there's a lot of negative examples of people trying to make stuff better that make things worse also. Mm-hmm. But I keep finding all these examples throughout history where I'm like, oh, these people are doing really amazing shit. And I never even heard of them, you know, because we don't talk about them enough.
Yeah. It's been systematically removed from the history that at least I learned in school in the 80s and 90s, you know. But
we touched real quickly on John Brown.
Real
quick. And he basically set the whole war off. All right, next one. Let's see.
And then no one ever talks about the fact that he wasn't alone. I mean, besides the fact that there were people directly with him, but he was part of this whole huge network, you know, that was that was like white and black abolitionists.
Yeah. I got the impression from history class that it was a lone nut situation.
Yeah.
This guy was really had his beans up You know?
They're like, all right, we'll give you a little bit. He has some kids, too, that may have been involved. But that's all we're going to tell you about. It was just him and his sons. That's it.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you are not accepting self-submitted packets of people telling their own story about like cool stuff they did in grade school when they
were
like
in 96.
Yeah. 96.
Amanda Broderick's pool party.
Yeah.
Did a backflip off the roof.
It's still in my inbox. I haven't finished going through it yet. Right.
Yeah. Okay. It got there. I was actually just concerned that it did.
Yeah. 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 No. I know you had me on just to check, but
okay. Cool. Well, I think we're done here.
Yeah.
All right. So, what stories are coming out today? Well, back in '98, actually, I was playing NBA Jam Tournament Edition. Everyone said this kid couldn't get beat, and lo and behold, I did. Maybe that could be.
Sounds cool. I don't know. I don't know what your definition of cool is. All right, Margaret, we're going to get to know you a little bit better in a moment. Mm-hmm. First, we're going to tell our listeners a couple of the things we're talking about today. January 6th, they're still looking into it.
Okay.
We have some breadcrumbs that indicate that there might be something there. And we're going to talk about Starbucks anti-union tactics, which are embarrassingly self-incriminating and also not very successful to this point. Some people think shockingly so. I think the direct quote is, "It's shocking how badly they're getting the shit kicked out of them," from one expert paying attention. So we're going to talk about that, why it might not be that shocking right now. We're going to talk about that study about what social media does to your brain. We might even get to some Star Trek, all of that, plenty more. But first, Margaret, we do like to ask our guests, what is something from your search history?
Well, I picked the most recent thing I searched was last night was plastic part broken on DeWalt miter saw because I was trying to make shelves and I tried to cut a very acute angle and something broke. It definitely was wearing all the right safety equipment. Absolutely. Of course, I would never do otherwise. Fortunately, nothing hit my eyes, which were definitely protected. And some plastic piece of my saw broke, and I have no idea where it comes from. And I'm just like looking at this part of my saw, and I'm like, huh.
But trying to be like, where did this come from?
Yeah, exactly. What did I break? I have no idea what this thing is. And if you search plastic part broken on DeWalt miter saw, you find the dust extractor because that's what everyone breaks. And Google saved me.
Is that what you broke?
Yeah.
Google saved you? Yeah. Hey, Google's good for
$6 part.
Hey, you know who else saves?
JC?
Jesus.
Yeah. Like we were both on the same wavelength there.
Yeah, just want to bring it back, man. We always got to bring it back to Christ.
Also a carpenter.
Yeah, also a carpenter. I know. Thank you.
So are you, Margaret, are you a carpenter?
No. I do a ton of different things. And then I realized that everything I do not for work cannot be on a computer because I already do everything else on a computer. And so I do some woodworking. And right now I'm trying to like build instruments and shelves a bunch of other shit.
Building instruments?
Yeah, it's
like
really
fun. Like guitars and shit?
Yeah, I build some electric guitars out of kits and do some of the woodworking and the soldering on them. But I also do a bunch of acoustic like folk instruments. Some of them I build from kits. Some of them I just kind of invent, make up, tie strings to wooden things and try and make them look
nice. Okay,
where
I get your albums? Where'd I hear your album?
Feminazgul.bandcamp.com, actually. Okay.
Yeah, okay. Margaret has... Go. Three separate, very impressive careers. It's it's like, are you five different people? How's that happening?
But so you're an activist. You're a luthier as well.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Isn't that the name for a guitar maker?
I don't know how to pronounce that word.
Yeah, or luthier.
Luthier,
we're
maybe.
We're going to be mad English.
I'm not a good one of that, but I use them in my metal band.
Oh, that's amazing.
Mm-hmm. It's mostly metal?
So I do a lot of things. The thing that I do that the most people listen to, my band that the most people listen to is a all-women black metal band called Feminazgul. And we play a lot of different instruments in the band. And I've been increasingly just like making my own instruments for it because why the fuck not?
Yeah, indeed. I would say to answer why the fuck not, I don't have the energy, mental bandwidth. This is a sign of like this is I've heard of this with very various like impressive people that they're the coach of the Indiana Pacers, Rick Adelman, Rick Carlisle, like builds his own golf clubs and is also like a concert pianist and all these various things. And like the point at which the genius starts building their own equipment, I'm like, I'm out. That's too much for me to identify with.
I like that sort of rule that you have, like where if so much work is happening on a screen that you also need something off screen. Mm-hmm. And I just realized, like, even when I play music, like I'm looking at a computer screen rather than just like taking my bass and just amplifying it and looking out a window and doing that instead of at a screen. Oh, man. OK, so I'm going to. Yeah, I like that. Thank you, Margaret. I'm going to take that into practice, actually.
Yeah, yeah. I'll be curious what you come up with.
Yeah.
What is something you think is overrated?
Okay, so I wrote this down before listening to your last episode. I think superheroes are overrated.
Uh-oh. Okay, yeah.
And I mean, there's nothing inherently wrong with them as a, you know, fiction trope or whatever, but I'm kind of bored of them. And I think that it shows, because I think all of the best and most engaging superhero characters are not the superheroes. They're the shows that are centered around like regular ass people who happen to live in a superhero world.
Yeah.
Wait, which ones?
Okay, this is a terrible example, but I just binge watched Peacemaker, and I never thought I would want to watch Peacemaker because he's the worst character.
Said it was good.
He's the worst character in that thing, and I'm like, why do I want to watch yet another like vindication of a right-wing white dude?
Right.
And it's really well written, but then the like, I don't remember actors or character names very well. The like hacker guy in it, who's just this like regular guy who's just like hanging out with all these people who are super trained killers. And he's like, all right, I guess we'll just try and save the world or whatever. I like him, you know, and I like the regular characters within.
Right.
Which is actually weirdly a defense of super. I didn't even intend to come here and defend superhero movies. but
yeah, let's focus on the regular people, not the super people, the 0.01 percenters of this reality. What about the hoi polloi out there just dealing with their normal people skills?
Yeah.
Yeah. Do we think we're headed in any direction other than more superhero movies all the time? There's definitely been some like dents in the Marvel armor a little bit with like the Eternals and shows, movies like that. But, you know, when you look at the most popular movies, it is for people who are like, not all movies should maybe be superhero movies. It's been a pretty bleak time, I'd say, since the beginning of the pandemic.
Yeah. Why pandemic equals only superheroes? Is it because you can shoot with fewer characters? I don't even know.
I don't know. Or maybe people are just more receptive to the idea of like a savior with magical powers, like in a time of chaos. And you're like, I don't know.
You know who else was a savior with magical powers in a time of chaos?
Satan.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
Gave people a lot of information. That's what I remember.
Yeah.
What is something you think is underrated?
Okay, I think something that's underrated is, and I tried to go for something a little bit less earnest, but I only came up with something super earnest. When workers take over their businesses and run them as co-ops without bosses. I see it slowly cropping back up, and you know, I know that we're going to talk about union stuff in a bit, but it just, that's a thing I've been seeing a little bit more of, and I think is underrated, and more people should too. Is fire
you might
their
give
bosses.
Us giving us a recent example that you saw again, because we want to put give people the imagination rather than describing.
Yeah,
what
sure.
happened with something you saw.
Okay, so like there's a pizza shop in Baltimore called Joe Squared, and during the pandemic it had to close, and because it was the pandemic. Well, it's still the pandemic, but you know, whatever.
Right.
And it was a family-run business, and the workers, and in this case, it was actually very positive. The owners just gave the business to their employees. I believe. I don't have all of the details in front of me about this. Mm. And basically, we're like, well, you all want to keep running it? And they're like, yeah, we do. And so now the workers run it as a workers' cooperative, and it's open again, and it's doing well. And it's part of this kind of like growing ecosystem in Baltimore of these worker cooperatives. Like part of the reason Joe Squared became one is it was across the street from a worker cooperative bookstore and cafe called Red Emma's. And basically they all hung out all the time. And they were like, yeah, we don't have bosses. We all
like
run
we
this
own
place.
And run this. Right.
Yeah. And like, why does democracy end when you get to work? You know, like I mean, democracy ended you know, when money got involved. But like theoretically, we have a say in political matters. Why do, as soon as we get to work, we just accept that someone's in charge of us? It doesn't.
Right. Yeah. It's like, yeah, I'm off to my gig where I go work in a despotic environment and don't ask questions because then I get my pittance and I'm fine.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I mostly hear about it in like bike shops and and like cafes and stuff. But pizza place is new.
Well, there's industry too, right? Yeah. Like as a worker-owned window factory in Chicago, where after they fired their bosses, they like bought it out as the business was failing. I don't remember the exact details. I think they actually had to stage some like sit-ins and strikes and stuff to do this. Now they all make, I think, twice as much money as they used to. And the business itself is like substantially more profitable because like who knows how to run a business like the workers? Sorry, I didn't even mean to.
Right.
Well, I guess I did mean to soapbox about this. I like wrote it down as my thing to talk about.
It's so counter to what we're going to end up talking about, like with, you know, the CEO's mindset is, I'd like to see you try.
Right.
I'd like to see you try and do this without me. And then, you know, it turns out that it's much, much better when that they do that. But everything else is like propped up. Like people will even read Ayn Rand. Like people read that book just to justify the I'd like to see you try ideal at the core of America's like kind of system. And they're like, it's actually well written. That was something I heard very early on. I was like, no, it's not.
It's also just fiction. It's a fiction book.
Right. But they found the one. They found that one story that's going to make
pretty
it
good.
But, all right. Well, let's take a quick break. We'll come back and talk about some of this stuff and how it affects the news.
Do you want to hear about the $100 wedding dress that just saved Abercrombie?
Or the tech acquisition that was just like Game of Thrones?
Or the one financial equation that can solve climate change?
Then check out our daily podcast, The Best One Yet, or as we call it, T-Boy.
This is Nick.
This is Jack.
And we pick the three most interesting business news stories every day for the perfect mix.
20 minutes each morning, you're going to feel brighter.
We call it Pop Biz, don't we, Jack?
Where pop culture meets business news. So whether you want to kick off a conversation with your buddies,
or you're going for that promotion at work,
or you just want to know the trends before your friends,
feel brighter by starting your morning with us every weekday.
Listen to The Best One Yet on the Wondery app or wherever you get your pods.
You can listen to The Best One Yet ad-free right now on Wondery Plus. For more deep dive and daily business content, listen on Wondery, the destination for business podcasts.
With shows like The Best One Yet, How I Built This, and many more, Wondery means business.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets. If you don't win your first bet, that's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
Hey, here's something you might not know about wireless. Sometimes what you see isn't what you get. But with Visible, what you see is what you get. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 per month, taxes and fees included. Visible is the wireless company that makes wireless visible. No hidden fees, no really. Save on wireless with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. You don't need more than one line of wireless to save. Just switch to Visible at Visible.com. Save on wireless without the hassle. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com. monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit visible.com.
There's nothing worse than wearing clothes that don't fit right. That's why Tomboy X makes size and gender inclusive underwear, swimwear, and loungewear for all bodies. Queer founded and run for over 10 years, you can trust they know a thing or two about making the perfect pair. Feel comfortable in your own skin. Shop online today and use code IHEART for 20% off your first purchase. Only at TomboyX.com. Tomboy X. Fit for you just as you are.
And we're back. We were just talking West Virginia off mic. Mm-hmm. Too hot for TV. We can't get into that live. But
I'm learning about all the cool features, geographic features. Shout out to the
difference
thing
between the panhandle and the spiky
yeah. thing at the top. The
spiky thing. Yeah. All right, let's check in with the January 6th inquiries, investigations that are happening. Yeah, what's going on?
There's a lot of buzz last week. I mean, mostly talking about the headlines dealing with a request from the Department of Justice asking the January 6th House Committee for, you know, some interview transcripts. And the line that a lot of people focused on was the one is that they asked for these transcripts because they, quote, may contain information relevant to a criminal investigation we are conducting. Uh-huh. So, you know, we've talked about the whole time, like, how quiet Merrick Garland has been. We're like, sir, you up to anything over there? Is this just kind of just waiting to see how things, you know, shake out with the House committee and then something's going to go on? But this seems to get a lot of the legal observers and theorists who are watching say, like, oh, no, this is significant. This is very significant. And I'm like, OK, why is it significant? So they say that this now shows that the investigations between the House committee and main justice are beginning to overlap in terms of their findings of criminal behavior, and that the House committee, you know, because they don't have the power to prosecute, they can only refer people to main justice, that they're saying, OK, so the Justice Department is clearly, if they're going to ask for this, they feel that they have some firm footing to really begin to go after the upper echelons of potentially some of the people that may have been involved. Which is okay. That's heartening to hear. But again, I'll believe it when I see it. And, you know, the other things is that because they say the other thing that they point to that has people excited is like, well, you know, Merrick Garland famously doesn't like to have anything that the Justice Department does or in his capacity in justice look like anything's being politicized. So they're being very quiet. And if now they're beginning to say, okay, we need these materials, it's indicating there's clearly a new phase that at least the Department of Justice has entered. So fine, from that vague 10,000 foot view, something's happening. A lot of people have pointed to the fact that Benny Thompson, who's the chairperson of that committee, has said he's not willing to share that material immediately. But a lot of people say this is just part of the back and forth between the House and Justice Department, where they need an agreement over how the materials are used or shared or whatever. But meanwhile, while that's happening, The Washington Post also published that Ginni Thomas is back at it again, or was not that she's back at it again, that they've uncovered even more fuckery from Ginni Thomas, who is, again, the wife of Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas. They describe her as a conservative activist in this piece. And I'm like, wow, OK, that's fun and euphemistic. But they said that she was sending emails to electors in Virginia, basically trying to push them to not accept what's happening with all the rampant fraud. This from the Washington Post. Quote, the email sent by Ginni Thomas to a pair of lawmakers on November 9th, 2020, argued that legislators needed to intervene because the vote had been marred by fraud. Though she did not mention either candidate by name, the context was clear. Mm. And days after media organizations called the race for Biden in Arizona and nationwide, Thomas urged the lawmakers again to, quote, stand strong in the face of political and media pressure.
Now, Margaret, as a fellow activist, mm-hmm. in the activist handbook, where it tells you, you know, be married to Supreme Court justice and send email forwards to powerful friends that you met at a dinner party, is that, you know, near the top of the list? How do you incorporate that into your playbook?
Well, it's actually it's in the appendices because
many people see it. Yeah.
Yeah. Because that way you can kind of get the sort of plausible deniability, being like, oh, I did that, but I didn't actually read it because I read the whole book. I just didn't read that stuff at the back where they define the terms and then tell you right. to pretend to believe in law, but not actually be believing in law at all.
Right.
And then just try and grab power by any way you can. That's all. Yeah, it's all in the back.
Pretty standard stuff, right? Yeah, it's really wild to continue to see all of this happen, you know, just on one side, it's just all of these just clear as day examples of like, oh, so we're just doing that and only waiting for, you know, I guess these bombshells as we see, read constantly in the New York Times and Washington Post are like, oh, just wait. When they do their public circus show in the beginning of June, the committee is going to have some real eye-opening revelations. Like, we saw them happen all in real time. So,
yeah.
I'm just, I don't know what else you got. My whole thing is, what else could you possibly have that in their mind is going to completely be like, the country's going to get on the same page and be like, okay, you're right. That was a bridge too far.
Yeah.
We didn't.
I mean, it's kind of like what was happening when Trump was in office, where it was like, every day they're like, we have new evidence about why we're going to impeach him. Mm-hmm. And you're like, okay. And it's like year three. And they're like, we swear, we're working on this,
this
thing.
One.
It's about to happen. And we're like, all the bad stuff has already been happening for 3 years.
Oh, but there's worse stuff.
Yeah.
Robert Mueller's 12 sexiest outfits. Robert Mueller beachwear. Looking like a snack in beachwear.
Oh, no. But yeah, again, apparently if, you know, without the subpoenas that have gone out, and they say there's some people like, you know, Bill Barr may actually speak with the committee, and who knows what he'll reveal. But, you know, it's hard to continue reading about all of this and then just sort of seeing like, I've yet to really see the justice system work in a tangible way to protect anything at this point, fucking anything. Ted Cruz just won at the Supreme Court, you know, for his own, like, for his own grievances about how he wanted to use his own campaign money. And we're like, this is okay. You know, I think we're free falling.
Yeah. So the subpoenas come home to roost in June. Is that when people start saying stuff that they didn't want to
That's
have
the
say?
Public hearings. That's when they're the whole show and tell begins on TV, baby.
Mm-hmm. At which point they're just going to find a way.
They're going to show us a clip of January 6th and be like, remember? Oh, right. No. Anyway, vote for Democrats. Remember? Wait, and then you're like, wait, hold on. That was it?
Yeah.
All this time for just for y'all to go, member, and then say vote for Democrats in November? Hey, member in November, okay?
Member? Yeah, so I don't know. I'm sure I'll find out about it on Twitter if something big happens there. But I feel very hopeless by just that the tone of this, it really does, Margaret, to your point, really does remind me of the whole Trump presidency and Rachel Maddow coming on with the tax returns, and it was like, get ready, motherfuckers. It is time. We got him. And then,
right. Yeah.
But then I think they fail to realize their own closeness to the people that they need to hold accountable.
Yeah.
And you see how unable they are to do that. Cause it's like, they're like, well, it's more like my cousin.
Right.
Yeah. And they're fucking everything up and making life hell for most people here. Now, fucking get your shit together. And, you know, pretend like you're some kind of legislator. But it's I think that's what's so disheartening is like, it's like the tools are there, but the will looks like absolutely just fucking just like spider webs in the wind.
Damn, that was a good spider webs in the wind.
It was. Yeah. Anyone who can see his hands, they were
thank you.
Very evocative.
Thank you, Margaret. Yeah, I did a little physical, you know, just want to bring everybody into it.
Yeah.
If Michael Winslow was a poet. That would be the sort of sound effects that we would get. See, I can't do that. All right, let's talk about Starbucks. I'm making a run. What's everyone want? No, Starbucks, anti-union tactics have been pretty transparent, open, hostile. So it began at the end of last year with a store in Buffalo. And as of May 13th, reportedly 69 Starbucks stores have voted to form unions. And
hey, nice.
So you're never going to guess who's not super thrilled about that. Starbucks is not super thrilled. Yeah. Well, so I should be clear. Starbucks views their employees as, quote, partners, which is interesting because, like, in a partnership, it's usually not. Like, if Paul Simon made billions of dollars while Garfunkel was getting, like, $15 an hour, we probably wouldn't have gotten Bridge Over Troubled Water from them. Also, they like to boast about the benefits that it offers their partners, including healthcare coverage. And we heard about this nonstop when Howard Schultz, former CEO of Starbucks, spoiler alert, once again, CEO of Starbucks, you know, in his memoir, but also when he was running for office, just loved to talk about how Starbucks employees. So he knew heading in that if Starbucks employees had faith in me and my motives, they wouldn't need a union, which is how, you know, cult leaders talk. But this is a detail that I had totally missed. And, you know, it speaks to what we were talking about earlier with the way that our country in general, our education system, our media controls information. How was it not like the first sentence after him making claims about getting healthcare for Starbucks employees, the first sentence after that should have been, actually, Starbucks employees first got healthcare in the 80s, not because of Howard Schultz, but because they were part of a union.
Well, but I was there at the time, so they got the healthcare.
He was not. Okay, then he took over as CEO after the union had negotiated that, and then went about just spent his full time job became trying to like kill the union that got them healthcare. But then I guess he left the healthcare around because it's really hard to take away good you know, good things from employees once they're instituted. But brought in consultants and attorneys specializing in anti-union campaigns to assist its decertification efforts.
Which is great. Yeah, fantastic. I mean, look, Howard Schultz, he knows what he's doing. He says one thing, he means another. He's his terrible, ill-deployed Holocaust anecdotes about sharing the blanket with his fellow partners. Remember that, like, cringy-ass all-hands meeting he did?
Oh, my God.
And he's like, like in the Holocaust, they had to share a blanket in the cars when they were going to concentration camps. And that's really been in my mind, the idea that we all have to share the blanket. And that's what I've brought to Starbucks. And you're like, I'm sorry, who is Starbucks in that metaphor? But OK. And, you know, I think this is what we've seen, too, is like all of the pushback. Right. Because everyone said the importance of that Buffalo unionizing effort is, we just need a fucking domino to fall. And they know, just like Amazon knows, one falls, everybody else starts again getting the fucking imagination, the fucking vision for something different. And now look at it. They're just like looking at a, you know, a fucking wave that they're trying to fight in a futile way of their partners wanting to unionize.
Yeah. At the national, like, messaging level, they're gaslighting people claiming, like, we're not anti-union, we're just pro-partner. But at the individual level, they are just fighting dirty as fuck.
We're not anti-abortion. We're pro-life.
I mean, yeah, could you imagine if you were just like, you're in a partnership and like my boyfriend is like, oh, we're in a partnership. And I'm like, great. So we're equals. And like, no. I mean, like, I tell you what to do and then you do it. And then if you don't do it, I'm going to make you homeless. And I'm like, oh, yeah, partnership. Okay. Yeah, totally.
So you're an overlord?
Yeah.
I like partner better than
partners. So last fall, after the Buffalo Starbucks began the process of starting a union election, Starbucks coincidentally closed the store for 2 months, innocently claiming it was suddenly going to be their new training center. And then out-of-town managers were showing up to work at Buffalo stores, not to spy on employees, of course, but just to listen to their concerns, except, unfortunately, one manager was caught on tape admitting that it was a, quote, last-ditch effort to try and stop them from unionizing.
And that there's a really interesting story about that Arizona Starbucks manager, right? So this manager in Arizona, she taped this, like, staff meeting because she's like, this sound like I thought it was about one thing. And they started talking about just straight up fuckery where they're like, man, the unions are bad. Like, this is going to take up all this money. And, you know, this one was like, OK, no, I need to put this on wax for everybody to hear. Later down the road, she was fired because of everything that can't the fallout from, you know, exposing that happening. But even before she taped that recording, I just want to play this clip because she actually spoke to More Perfect Union just about like what her experience was like working at Starbucks before she finally was like, no, this is all kinds of fucked up. And namely, she had been diagnosed with cancer like a month before that. And when she was trying to talk with managers and things to say, how can I like survive or what can Starbucks do to help me given my health condition? It was just all a bunch of corporate fuck yous.
I was asking to have fewer days. I was asking for what my other options were. I was told I could go on a leave of absence, but those are unpaid. And also you would have to pay your benefits out of your own pocket. And also you couldn't get a second job because then Starbucks wouldn't be required to give you benefits, which obviously wouldn't work for me because I can't be unpaid and paying bills, right? I remember calling my district manager in tears. I was like, I don't have family. I don't have friends. I have no one. What am I supposed to do?
And they basically said, fuck you.
Mm.
It goes on to say down the road, there's a bronchitis outbreak at the store she was at. And she had to come in and open because she had no other option but to come in sick and then collapsed at work because she's dealing with cancer. She has bronchitis. And they were like, yeah, you got it. You got to keep working. You got to stay in there. So this is like, you know, I think many people have experienced things like this, you know, where you're up against, you know, a corporation or a management scheme that is saying, you're not actually a person. Here's the deal. Like, we need bodies in that fucking store. I don't give a shit what you're going through. And if not, we'll fuck it. You know, look, capitalism's so brutal. I can toss you out and find another desperate person who's willing to completely exploit themselves because they have no other option. And that, I think that context, I just wanted people to hear this person's voice because a lot of times when we talk about this, it's one thing to just sort of describe it and another to actually hear somebody say, like, I was talking to my company, Starbucks, and they said, you better not get another job,
right?
Or else you don't need benefits from us.
But it also gets at, like, what's so good about a union. You know, she's sitting there and she's saying, like, well, I don't have anything. I don't have friends. I don't have family. You know, basically, she's appealing to her bosses being like, you're the only ones I've got. And they're like, well, we don't fucking care. But that's what's so beautiful about a union, if it's done right, is like, well, no, then you actually have each other. Like, not necessarily like the cold union bureaucracy, which can be good or bad or whatever, but you actually just have each other. You can take care of each other and you can, I don't know.
There's a real structure in place to actually, you know, protect somebody's, you know, their acknowledge someone's humanity in a way that has tangible outcomes.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Let's actually take a quick break and we'll come back and talk about, you'll never guess who decided to come back and rejoin as the CEO. It's a major plot twist. It's Howard Schultz. It's who you would expect.
Do you want to hear about the $100 wedding dress that just saved Abercrombie?
Or the tech acquisition that was just like Game of Thrones?
Or the one financial equation that can solve climate change?
Then check out our daily podcast, The Best One Yet, or as we call it, T-Boy.
This is Nick.
This is Jack.
And we pick the three most interesting business news stories every day for the perfect mix.
20 minutes each morning, you're going to feel brighter.
We call it Pop Biz, don't we, Jack?
Where pop culture meets business news. So whether you want to kick off a conversation with your buddies,
or you're going for that promotion at work,
or you just want to know the trends before your friends,
feel brighter by starting your morning with us every weekday.
Listen to The Best One Yet on the Wondery app or wherever you get your pods.
You can listen to The Best One Yet ad-free right now on Wondery Plus. For more deep dive and daily business content, listen on Wondery, the destination for business podcasts.
With shows like The Best One Yet, How I Built This, and many more, Wondery means business.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
Hey, here's something you might not know about wireless. Sometimes what you see isn't what you get. But with Visible, what you see is what you get. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 per month, taxes and fees included. Visible is the wireless company that makes wireless visible. No hidden fees, no really. Save on wireless with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. You don't need more than one line of wireless to save. Just switch to Visible at Visible.com. Save on wireless without the hassle. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Is your underwear in need of a refresh? Meet Tomboy X, makers of the original boxer briefs for women, queer-founded and queer-run. Tomboy X designs sustainable, gender-inclusive underwear and apparel in sizes 3 extra small to 6 extra large. Use code IHEART at checkout for 20% off your first purchase only at TomboyX.com. Shop now on TomboyX.com.
And we're back. And so this is actually something I'd like to see you try. I alone can fix it, sort of megalomaniac ideology that, I mean, one of those things was a direct quote from Trump. But, you know, people are also speculating that now that Bezos has like got these itchy Twitter fingers about tweeting about policy, that it seems like, you know, that's usually symptom one that a billionaire is going to try and run for public office. And so also in that vein, we've got Howard Schultz, the first union killing CEO of Starbucks, who had stepped down as CEO to run for public office and is now coming back, calling it a volunteer position, being paid a salary of $1, which is just right in line with that.
Brave.
We're partners, just public gestures at a national level, while at a actual interpersonal level, like trying to kill people, you know, essentially. He's back leading the push, and he immediately announced sizable raises and new benefits for employees, but only the non-unionized ones. Which I think is illegal and discrimination against union members. And, you know, the union.
Although they said very clear, they're like, no, you can do that. You can. Currently, you can't when they're trying to like get a collective bargaining agreement. Like, we can't actually do anything right there. So that's why, like, it's for the good kids, the good partners that aren't taking up for themselves.
Also, allegedly intimidating pro-union employees, cutting hours, and one employee in Denver, where Starbucks employees held a strike, was grilled by a corporate investigator over taking home leftover food, which, you know, everyone does.
Leftover foods for garbage cans. Not for fucking mouths that need them. Fuck face, what are you doing? I'm a corporate investigator.
I mean, there's all those people who, like, put bleach on the, like, before you throw out the bagels at night, you better put bleach on them so that if any, like, people who need food go in there, they die. You know,
they're poisoned because that's what they deserve for not having bootstraps on their bare feet. That's the problem.
There's actually an amazing detail in this story where Starbucks investigators began grilling him, repeatedly demanding the identities of workers who took food and demanding to know who was homeless. So,
oh my God.
Oh my God.
That's like they...
Like undercover unhoused employee, like that's what they're worried about.
That's
like,
what they're worried
who
about.
Who doesn't have a home?
We better fire the people who are. We already don't pay
we
enough.
We have no problem here. We take care of our employees. Which of them are homeless?
Yeah.
To what end? Is it that the optics, they're like, we can't have someone who's unhoused working here because then that reinforces the idea of the working unhoused person in this country. So we only want people who are struggling week to week pray for a fucked apartment. And that's who we want to exalt as our partners. Like, what?
I bet they think that they'll take food home if they're
right.
They're homeless.
Yeah, I think right. That seems to be what it was connected to. So
to their homeless homies or something like that. I've read about.
God forbid. Yeah.
They've launched an anti-union propaganda website that states that partners are better side by side than sitting across a negotiating table and doing the standard. Unions are a business, just like Starbucks, and they make money by collecting dues, which is like the first line in on the 10 things to know about a union, like anti-union propaganda, everything. They've fired over 20 union leaders around the U.S. for justifications as flimsy as purposely breaking a sink and swearing. And yeah, and still they're getting their ass kicked.
Well, I think because it shows, right? They're because no matter what they do, the die has been cast. Like, this is how workers feel. This is how too many people have experienced the working in America for nothing. And no matter all the little raises you do or fucking gift baskets or fucking fleece sweatshirts with their name embroidered on it, it's not going to make up for the just innate feeling of imbalance that exists when you clock into a place like Starbucks. Yeah. And even now you see how desperate the company is. They recently were like, hey, man, if you want, if you got to travel for an abortion or gender affirming medical procedures, we'll cover the cost to travel, but don't unionize.
Yeah,
right.
Don't unionize. We'll give you that. How about that? That sounded good, right? And they just throw out these small little like scraps to try and gesture as if we're changing something. Yeah. But the workers fundamentally don't think anything's changing. And I think so. At this point, it's odd to see them keep trying this without understanding. Like, you might as well try and embrace this and figure out how to make it work for everyone. But
and the union dues thing always drives me crazy because it's like, how bad do you think I am at basic math? Because like, okay, everyone who has a union brings home more money than everyone who doesn't have a union. Like, you just end up with more money. And so like I have a literary agent, right? And he gets 15% of every book I sell. And I'm not like, oh man, that guy takes 15% of every book I sell, because he looks at my contracts and then he negotiates them up more than 15%. I am not losing money. I am grateful to pay him for the service that he does me of making me make more money. And that's what it means to pay a union due, is like, yeah, this guy's job is to make sure I get paid a lot. I'm really excited to hire him, because you are hiring your union reps, you know? Like, anyway.
But they always use the imagery of like these union fat cats.
Yeah.
You know, like, I'm sorry, what is this, an early 90s like smear ad? Like, really? Fat cats? Like, you think that's going to work on millennial and Gen Z workers? They don't give a fuck about it. They're like, what? Fat cat? No, motherfucker. I have barely anything and I need to, like, I need the minimum what's due to me as a human being. How about that?
Yeah.
But
it's again, so. Like the use of progressive social politics, like Starbucks is also the place where they took a day off to talk about race and then like tried to put it on their employees to have conversations about race with like customers. But then, yeah, this thing about like paying for people to travel and stuff, like it's so toxic to any progressive movement for that to be used as a like screen for just retrograde, like anti-leftist, you know, fiscal policy and like abuse of employees. That's going to do more harm than like the right could ever do to those ideas.
Yeah, they're like, you can talk about anything but class. We will talk about all forms of oppression, except for the fact that you can't afford to eat food.
Yeah.
Let's talk about class collaboration, huh? Y'all fucking with crypto? Like, wait, huh? No, hold on. That's just another episode. But yeah, it all comes together, I think, in this way that for people who just fundamentally like have the experience of lack, none of this shit is going to convince you until that you experience the opposite of it, until you experience abundance. That's the only thing that's going to like slow down the momentum here. But that's they can't do that. Their shareholders will lose their shit if things like that begin to happen. So I don't know. I guess good luck with the empty gestures.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. The empty gestures, the sort of, you know, broad like wordplay at a national level, like it feels like that shit, which is like fully what the like mainstream Democratic Party and a lot of their corporate partners have bought into. It feels like that has officially just run out. Like, I don't know, the you know, quote at the end of this that says it's shocking how badly they're getting the shit kicked out of them. I think there was a lot of people saying similar things about Connor Lamb, this Democratic like wonder darling. Boy darling who was running for the Senate and got the shit kicked out of him by like sort of an outsider candidate in shorts. And it just feels like there is a overall movement, like all these shocking ass beatings are happening in the same direction. And it seems like it would be very obvious and like an overwhelming message that the time is right for Democrats to like run to the left and embrace unions and embrace, you know, people, the actual humans and workers. And the fact that it each time is being treated as like, what the heck is going on here?
Yeah. AIPAC spent $4 million trying to defeat Summer Lee. How did she win? AIPAC spent millions trying to, the formula's not working anymore.
Yeah. It's just, there's the sort of mainstream media and mainstream Democrat apparatus just feels like there's just it's gone dark. Like they can't communicate.
They're realizing like the relationship between, you know, the DNC and like leadership and what normal people are experiencing is like they're at that phase, like in a relationship where you keep saying, yeah, I'm gonna do the dishes. Don't worry. I'm gonna do the dishes. I'm gonna get to the dishes. I'm gonna get to the dishes. And they believe you for a minute.
Yeah.
Till they go in the kitchen and the dish pile's a fascist fucking Gundam made up of fucking fucked up pots and pans. And now it's trying to vaporize you and all your fucking rights. And then you're like, what the fuck happened in here?
I said I would do the dishes. And by that, I mean turn them into a Gundam.
Exactly. And also, I'm glad you're here. Can you loan me $14 so I can tackle this fascist stack of dishes I created with my ineptitude? The fuck are you talking about? And now they want people to believe that shit? That's bullshit. And I think that's what they're not realizing is the pile of dishes has become too high. And what you need to overcome now is that you prove you can do the fucking dishes. That's it. Just do one of them. Fucking pick any one of them. Fucking what, anything. Voting rights, maybe? Child tax credit? Anything.
Or tax credit.
Or tax credit. I mean, that would even sound cool and people might believe it was a child tax credit. But that's what I think is like, there, like article after article is about how the establishment is not understanding what's going wrong. And they don't, it's like the most basic thing.
They're not dumb. They're just picking their class allegiance over their ostensible political values. They're like, the Democratic Party is the party of capitalism, as at least as much as the Republican Party. And but the actual people who vote Democrat don't like capitalism anymore because people eventually figured out what was happening. And the sort of shadow of the Soviet Union has fallen long enough that people no longer have to look at that horrible example. And so the Democrats are like, oh, well, we like capitalism, right? And everyone's like, no, we don't. You know, so I don't know. I don't think that they're like, I mean, they're lying to us, but I don't think they're dumb.
Well, no, I think more of that dumb in the sense that their time, like the tools of misinformation that used to work really well aren't.
Oh, yeah.
And I think they haven't come to the realization that the populace isn't feeling it.
No, that makes sense.
You know, and they're like, what the heck? It's like, usually do this. I put my kente cloth on and I kneel with Colin Kaepernick. And then they don't realize I've completely done nothing about police violence.
Yeah.
You know, or I put a trans flag outside my office and then I don't have to speak on like untold accounts of violence that are occurring across the country because I did my gesture. What the fuck? The gestures aren't working.
Yeah.
And I think on that level, it's, and to that point is, yeah, the only way for it to work like you're saying, Margaret, is that they have to give up the ghost on capitalism.
Yeah.
Right.
And they can't do that. So now we're just watching it fucking the machine just like someone threw a cinder block in a fucking dryer.
Yeah. Right.
And they're like, I don't know, like it's fucking not working. It's like, yeah, no shit. Like everybody's burnt out. Like nobody's believing them. Like so many people aren't buying the myth anymore.
Yeah.
But I think that's the hardest pill for them to swallow, is that there are more and more people aren't as into the myth. And what do you do with that?
Yeah.
I mean, the labor movement in the U.S. has always been pretty, you know, has faced a stiff headwind. It's not a lot of tailwinds for the labor movement, but is there anything to learn from the history or, you know, activism or, you know, the stories cool that you've things. Been? Yeah.
Well, Mark, I can tell you about some cool people who did some cool stuff really quickly.
Oh, okay.
Sure. And so I don't have my notes in front of me. So consider this the storyteller mode. When I do my actual podcast, I'm like, and in this date, the following person whose name I remember did the following thing.
Just chilling.
But the way that my brain works is that when the details aren't in front of me, they kind of drift away into the story. So if you want the details, you should listen to my podcast. But basically, for example, the fight for the 8-hour workday had been going on for hundreds of years before it eventually kind of worked. And we kind of have the 8-hour workday, although very few people I know actually have the 8-hour workday actually now. But, you know, theoretically, we have it. And it kind of came to a head when basically a whole bunch of anarchists and other socialists started gaining more and more power in the union movement in the 1870s, 1880s. And there was all these huge strikes. And what people forget is that a lot of these strikes, they were life or death fights. People talk about like, oh, these crazy radicals. Like at the end of this story, someone's going to throw a bomb, right? But what had been happening prior to that was, you know, there was this great railroad strike that started in, I think, Western Maryland and swept through West Virginia. And it went out all the way out west is the way they describe it at the time, which means all the way to Chicago. Right. You know, so the entire country from Maryland to Chicago was shut down by this railroad strike. And so the National Guard, militias, like all of these different groups got together and just murdered workers. Cops were just shoot down workers.
Yeah, machine guns.
Yeah. Yeah, West Virginia in particular, whenever workers go on strike, they sometimes just get machine gunned. And, you know, and basically at some point, people started being like, well, we don't like sitting here and getting machine gunned. And so all of these labor speeches started being like, look, we either starve to death, because that's what's happening, or we die in the streets fighting for our rights and that we get to take home the stuff we make, right? Like, because at the end of the day, a lot of the labor movement is just literally about like, we made the stuff. Why do you get the money for the stuff we made? Mm-hmm. You know, because like, for example, that guy who's now taking a dollar salary, right? As if that means anything to him. But rich people aren't paid by salaries. Rich people are paid by owning things. And so they're paid by the money that other people make. And so all of this comes to a head in Haymarket. Basically, the workers, socialists and anarchists, sort of both, anarchists get kind of written out of history, and actually so do socialists in this country. They're organizing. They're like, all right, we just want an 8-hour workday at the very least. And so we're going to call for a general strike on May 1st, 1886. And on May 1st, 1886, like hundreds of thousands of workers go out on strike across the country, especially in Chicago. And a lot of bosses are like, fine, we get it. You get 8 hours a day instead of like the 14 hours a day often that people were working. But a lot of other places weren't. And so people keep going on strike. So then at a particular factory, the McCormick Reaper factory, which is a really metal name for a farming equipment factory in Chicago.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, these people who are making reapers all day. Mm. They're throwing rocks at scabs. They're hanging out outside, and basically the people who come in and take their jobs when they're out on strike, they're throwing rocks at them. And so the cops come up and start shooting into the crowd and kill several people. And several of the people involved in all that were anarchists and socialists, but the anarchists sort of catch the brunt of this particular repression. So the anarchists call for a rally on Haymarket Square on the 4th. They call for this rally. Everyone goes being like, what's going to happen? What's going to happen? And nothing is going to happen. So it's a nice, peaceful rally at the end of it. The mayor comes and the mayor hangs out and he's like, oh, this rally seems okay. Everything's going okay. And he's like, all right, I'm going to head home. But the chief of police in that area really, really doesn't like these people. And he's been looking for an excuse to come in and not just crackheads, but shoot people, basically. And so he shows up at the very end, once people are starting to disperse, and people are afraid that he's going to start shooting. I don't know, whatever happens. And then someone throws a bomb at the cops. A couple cops die, and then a lot of cops die in the ensuing gunfight because all of the cops are the ones shooting, and they shoot each other a lot. And there's this massacre. It's called the Haymarket Massacre. A bunch of people die on both sides, but a lot of the evidence is that, whatever, anyway, the cops did almost all the shooting, which I'm not trying to come at someone who's like, they keep killing us, so maybe we should shoot back. I'm not trying to come at about that.
Right.
So then they arrest a whole bunch of people, and they charge them not with having thrown the bomb or knowing who threw the bomb or having anything to do with the bombing. They charge them literally with being anarchists. They're like, we don't like you. We want you to die. And so actually the people who defended them, like their lawyer, was not an anarchist. Their lawyer just believed in law. He was like, you can't do that. You can't put people on trial for their beliefs in the United States or whatever. But you can, actually. It's a very effective thing. And they got found guilty and they got hanged, a bunch of them. And the thing that came out of it at the very beginning was this huge backlash against the labor movement. They're like, oh, these terrible, filthy anarchists, they're throwing bombs, they're murdering everyone. And so there was this immediate contraction of the labor movement. But then it came back much stronger once people started seeing what a terrible injustice was happening. And their deaths sparked, well, they reinvigorated the fight for the 8-hour workday, which wasn't actually really won in the United States until, I believe, the 1920s or something like that. But they sparked internationally a huge amount of the labor movement. And so there's this, like, May 1st is the workers' day in every country except the United States. And it's literally because the United States is, like, afraid of commemorating the Haymarket anarchists. So those are some example of cool people did cool stuff. My show gets into a lot of, like, the individual people, the individual martyrs, the individual organizers. I conjecture about who actually threw the bomb, who's, like, never been found in history. So you get your little true crime stuff in there.
Amazing. That's amazing that is not a story that we all learn. Like, especially when that is the main story that is the undercurrent of all American history up to this point is, you know, the fight between labor and capital.
Yeah.
And so that day is honored in other countries and not in the United States?
Yeah, there's, like, basically, as far as I don't have the details in the years in my, like, burned into my memory, but the more liberal, the less radical labor unions were totally fine to go along with the government and create Labor Day as an alternative instead of May Day, which is celebrated all around the world. And then, kind of unfortunately, May Day kind of became slightly more of like the Soviet Union was, like, really into May Day, even though they also liked killing all the anarchists for being anarchists. So I don't really like letting them have it either. But yeah, no. And then all over the world you'd go, and, you know, in the end of the 19th century, and there'd be photos of the Haymarket martyrs on the wall in every, like, union hall, because people are like, these are the people who, you know, were killed just literally for, well, in this case, they were killed for not the 8-hour workday. They were killed because they wanted to end capitalism. They wanted workers to get to keep the stuff they make, keep the value of what they make, you know?
Right. All right. Well, thank you for, that's what a great illustration of exactly what we're talking about and where this lack of imagination for revolution kind of comes from.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
In our modern world.
Yeah. Never let people know what they can do collectively.
Right. Yeah.
That's just, don't put the instruction manual to that out there or let people know that's a thing.
Okay. Wait, I have a.
Built it for a second in 2020, but then people are like,
the lesbian sex in the UK, they were going to outlaw it in, I think, the early 1920s. This came up in some other research I was doing about history of gay sex, which is another cool thing that people do. And they were going to outlaw it in the UK. But then you can read the notes from Parliament or whatever the fuck the UK uses to govern itself. And they're like, they're like, we can't outlaw this because it'll give women ideas.
Oh, wow.
Because they're like, it's all these men. And they're like, women can do that? No.
Like, yo,
no woman has ever thought of such a thing, except a few outlandish cases. We can't put it into law. They'll go out and do it.
Amazing.
Morally stimulate the what? nah, no. Keep it legal. Keep it legal. Yeah. Don't put an instruction manual out for satisfaction of female sex organs, please.
That's the law. Don't the law is like, and then don't do this. And then don't do this. And then if she's responding like this, don't do this.
Definitely
don't do this.
Yeah. Well, Margaret Killjoy, such a pleasure having you on Daily Zeitgeist.
Yeah, thanks for having
me. Go check out her show. Cool people who did cool stuff. And where can people find you, follow you, all that good stuff?
I'm on Twitter way more often than I wish I was, which is at Magpie Killjoy. And I'm on Instagram way more than I wish I was, at Margaret Killjoy. And you can find my books by searching my name and things like that.
And is there a tweet or some of the work of social media you've been enjoying?
Oh, yes. The tweet I picked fits in very well with all of this. Jake Hanrahan, a war correspondent, tweeted on May 18th, "Another military enlistment building in Russia set on fire by activists. This one is on the outskirts of Moscow."
All right.
Yeah, they keep going up.
Hmm.
They keep going up.
Miles, where can people find you? What's a tweet you've been enjoying?
Oh, boy. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Miles of Gray. If you like basketball, check out Miles and Jack Got Mad Boosties, our basketball podcast. And if you like trash reality show, check out 420 Day Fiancé, where Sophia Alexandra and I talk about 90 Day Fiancé in an elevated fashion. Let's see. Some tweets that I like. First one is actually from Summer Lee, who just won in Pennsylvania, despite the outside spending. Dave Wasserman tweeted, "I've seen enough. State Rep Summer Lee wins the PA-12 Dem primary, defeating Steve Irwin." And she tweeted, $4.5 million, fire emoji and garbage can, because that's how much outside spending was done to keep a friggin' corporate Dem. They're like, no, we can't get these people who are like saying stuff about apartheid states. No, I don't like talk like that. Another one is from, Pixelated Boat. At Pixelated Boat tweeted, "Just as Elon Musk predicted, now that he's a Republican, his political enemies are smearing him by making him pay $250,000 4 years ago to settle his sexual misconduct claim." Yes, the time travelers won again. And then finally, just from Jason Concepcion at Network with the 3 instead of an E tweeted, "Well, I'm a fascist now, and it's your fault." And that's every billionaire after getting roasted online.
Yep, that was mine. You can find me on Twitter at Jack_O'Brien. It was the one tweet I read while I was sick these past 2 days.
Oh, no.
But see, if anything, I was assisting you. I was lending you my voice.
Alley-oop, and I dunked it home.
There you go. That was mine.
That was it. There it was. It was that one.
There it was.
But also, check out the Robert Ory episode of Miles and Jack Got Mad Boosties. That was a blast. A true pleasure.
If you want to hear us nerd out, if you want to hear the childlike excitement in our voices, check that episode out.
Yeah. You can find me on Twitter at Jack_O'Brien. You can find us on Twitter at Daily Zeitgeist. We're at The Daily Zeitgeist on Instagram. We have a Facebook fan page and a website, dailyzeitgeist.com, where we post our episodes and our footnotes.
Footnote.
We link off to the information that we talked about in today's episode, as well as a song that we think you might enjoy. Miles, what song do we think people might enjoy?
Actually, Margaret, are you cool if we go out on a Feminaz Ghoul track?
Oh, yeah. Sure. Please do.
Please, I would let you pick one. What do you think is a good entry song for people? Like, I like metal. Uh-huh. I'm going to see my sugar in a couple weeks. But I'm curious what you think is a good track, just to get the people interested, because we touched on your genius. So let's indulge
it. All right. Well, one of our weirdest and heaviest songs that I'm really excited about is called "A Malacht," which is Irish for a curse. And it is actually our latest single. It's our Adult Swim single. So
nice. Oh, okay. So this is going to be "A Malacht" from Feminaz Ghoul. Check this out.
All right. Well, the Daily Zeitgeist is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows. That is going to do it for us this morning. We are back this afternoon to tell you what is trending. We'll talk to you all then. Bye.
Bye.
Yeah!
Here's something you might not know about wireless. Sometimes what you see isn't what you get. But with Visible, what you see is what you get. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. Just $25 per month, taxes and fees included. Switch now at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
There's a lot of pros to drinking Health Aid kombucha. No cons that I can think of. Pro, amazing taste. Pro, pairs well with anything. Pro, probiotic. That's a literal pro. And it's deliciously refreshing. It's the perfect pairing to your meal or great on its own, whether you're having Pink Lady Apple, Berry Lemonade, or one of the other great flavors. It's the perfect swap for soda or alcohol. Make it part of your daily routine. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid Kombucha today.
There's nothing worse than wearing clothes that don't fit right. That's why Tomboy X makes size and gender inclusive underwear, swimwear, and loungewear for all bodies. Queer founded and run for over 10 years, you can trust they know a thing or two about making the perfect pair. Feel comfortable in your own skin. Shop online today and use code IHEART for 20% off your first purchase. Only at TomboyX.com. Tomboy X. Fit for you just as you are.
You don't have to hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents. Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like EcoEye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV. And be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feeling Good playlist. Just say Free This Week into your Xfinity voice remote.